Hello, you're now listening to the Modum Podcast, where we deconstruct, examine, and discuss deeply technical data networking and information technology topics. Sit back and relax while we fire up Dial D and the 9600 baud modem and connect to the Wildcat BBS.
Hello, welcome to another very haphazardly planned version of the Modum Podcast. Today, we're season three, episode, three, maybe four, I don't even know. But we're going to talk about DHCP option 108, which, of course, you know, if you look through the cavalcade of podcasts that are available, Simpsons did it first, aka it was a very good episode on Hexabuild, or on the IPv6 Buzz podcast about this. We're going to talk about some more operational experience that I've had with it. And with me to call me out on my BS is, of course, a triad of brainiacs here. We got Chris, we got Kevin, and we have Trey. So Chris Cummings, how are you doing today?
Not bad. It's been a minute since we've been on and done this thing.
I know it has been. That's why this was so haphazardly planned.
It was very flawlessly planned. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't see any problems. No, I'm excited to talk about, we're talking about DHCP option 108, which we all know is like one better than DHCP option 107, which was
That's what I heard. Worst. Yeah.
So yeah, and looking forward to getting educated on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Man, I'm good. You know, playing with IPv6, you know, on any given day as usual. How are you guys?
Doing great. And last but certainly not least, Trey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Just hanging out, avoiding real work, talking to you guys.
Oh, I mean, I can think of way worse things.
Agreed.
Yeah, like you could be talking to just Nick and not Kevin and I.
I know.
Ooh, that would be much worse.
Not Nick, he's the worst.
Nick, wasn't there a sign over your door at one point that says Nick is the worst or something?
No, like it said just blame Satan and then crossed out. No, right. It was just blame Nick and then someone crossed that out and put Satan, and then someone put a little note to that, aren't they the same?
Yeah.
Or pretty much the same. I still have a picture of that. I think that was Ryan Harden, I believe, my old office mate that wrote that in there. He was at least privy to the activity. But
I stand by that sentiment.
I mean, you know, sometimes it's a duck you call it a duck, right?
So, okay, what is DHCP 108? Is it
It's funny you should ask. You know, it's very timely that you would ask that question. So DHCP option 108, it's relatively new. It is an option for IPv4 DHCP that essentially disables IPv4. So if your IPv4 DHCP server presents you with the option 108, and your client supports it, your client will say, oh, you are an IPv6 only network, which is what it's signaling. I'm going to go ahead and turn off IPv4 if I'm able to do so. The nice thing about it is it will be mostly happily ignored by clients that don't support it. There, we'll talk about a couple of the exceptions there. It's going to be the usual suspects, but I don't know. I've always found the irony in the fact that it uses the protocol to communicate that it's disabling for a duration.
Makes
me
think of like the, you know, Star Wars, like ironic. The only thing IPv4 could not save was himself. So like the TLDR then is that basically you're on a network that presumably has to be dual stacked at this point. Well, you could do it on a single stack V4 network, but you'd probably have a bad time if you did this. But you would be dual stacked on an IPv6, IPv4 network, and then your IPv4 DHCP server hands out, you know, an address and goes, oh yeah, by the way, here's your option 108, which says, don't use that address I just gave you. Or maybe it does it before it gives out the address, but part of that whole Dora, the Explorer, you know.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that uses Dora for the DHCP acronym.
It works.
I've been using that for 15 years.
It works, the only man. One. Yeah, it just puts that option into its DHCP backpack and grabs a map and let's go. So it basically then tells the IPv6 client, just the client in general, to, hey, don't use that DHCP V4 address and only use your V6? Or what's the kind of point of that then?
So essentially what it does is it will present you with a time period. It's I can't remember how it actually formats that, but it's essentially turn off IPv for this period of time. And it hands you that. I don't believe it gives you an address, or maybe I haven't actually done a TCP dump of it to see, but it hands you this code, 108, that says disable IPv4 if you're capable for this amount of time. Now, if you match that up to, lease times and things like that, or 50% of lease times, however you want to do it, because DHCP will always ask for a renewal at 50% of its time. The option 108 will disable your IPv4 stack. And on most systems that support it, it will enable like a CLAT client. So CLAT being, the 464XLAT client piece of that.
So it's basically the client as part of the discoverer is going to say, hey, give me, or maybe the request. I forget how that works because I haven't messed with DHCP in a long time because I don't actually do anything useful anymore. But like it basically asks the server like, hey, I want to do this 108 thing. Like what's the option time for that? Just like you would request an option 60, whatever the heck for TFTP or all of those different options that you would, always request from the client.
Yeah, I believe it presents that as part of the option. So I believe it all comes, formatted in the response of, here's my time period. It's all defined in RFC 8925, which is, I think, only 2 years old at the oldest, published October 2020.
So it's pretty cool then, because then your client can still, presumably your client's going to ask for this option if it has, like you mentioned, CLAT, so it can still work with things that have IPv4 literals hard coded in them, like Spotify still, or cruddy websites or whatever. And it can still work with that because then your host presents you with like a loopback v4 address, like 192.0, whatever that, like
192.0.0.2 usually.
Yeah, 0.0.2 on Mac OS. Because I've seen that on my Mac and it actually works pretty well. Like you can just, it's really handy because you can just like ping your like handy dandy, like I'm used to pinging 1.1.1.1 to see if the internet's working, and it just kind
of you're pinging your Cisco wireless controller.
Yeah my WLC. What else
would
you ping? The loopbacks that you set up in the network in like the early 2000s that you haven't changed yet, the 1.1.1 loopback.
Yeah,
because we don't have enough lab IP space.
Exactly,
indeed. So the nice thing about it is you might see it referred to as IPv6 mostly. And the thing that I really like about it, and I've built this out and it's running in Chris and I's office on our IoT network, which is the only network that has V4 enabled on it still. It allows the client to rise to whatever the level of evolution that it supports. And so that's why they call it IPv6 mostly. So if you can run in a completely IPv6 only mode and you support 464XLAT and all of those things, you can run in sort of in what I call an enlightened state, right? Mm-hmm. Assuming you've got a NAT64 in the path and a DNS64 and all that set up, right? You will operate in a very elegant manner like Chris described, where you've got your CLAT client, you can ping 1.1.1 and most of your problems kind of go away. But if you can't, like this is why we tested on our IoT network, because we've got devices that just don't even have an IPv6 stack at all. So they just happily get an IPv4 address and operate completely devoid of any knowledge that's happened. They ignore the option. They don't do V6. They just go however they are, with legacy IP, and they operate that way. And then other clients that are dual stack, but maybe don't support 108, like Windows, they will just happily run dual stacked.
How long has this thing been out? I know. I love how you guys all look at me, the guy that's been running Windows since 1985. How long?
October 2020 is when the RFC was published. So it's still relatively new.
So operationally, this is basically the host doing like an anti-lease, essentially. So I'm saying for this many hours, don't give me V4. And then it'll re-up and say, hey, can I get another 4 hours without a V4 address?
Yep. And it will also, if you set it for 5 minutes, right, but your lease time is longer, that's actually a good test case. I haven't tested that, but my belief is that it will disable it for 5 minutes, and after 5 minutes, it will re-enable it again.
This sounds the dual stack version of like PIM dense mode, where you're just like pruning your V4 address periodically.
Yeah. That's a good comparison, actually.
That is actually a very good comparison. Boy, Trey with the multicast. Yeah.
Not many people can whip out multicast as the way you explain something. Usually you use something else to explain multicast.
Let's be honest, it's probably not the best choice.
It's an upside down tree, and then...
that's really interesting. So in what I like about it, too, is like a lot of the original V6 stuff seemed to be like, oh, just let the clients decide. And we're like, well, turns out that doesn't work actually super duper well in practice. In theory, perhaps it works okay, but in practice, it all of a sudden gets really messy. And so like, I do like that this allows you to still have that centralized kind of at least control, not quite control in this case, but at least guidance for your clients to like inform them what you're capable of. And then it seems to actually kind of strike a nice balance of those two things versus just being that like the GAI.conf like source address selection stuff, which is like, we just configure all of this client side and never update it. And we, you know, are stuck on this old stuff. Like,
yeah, I like the dynamic nature of it because like I said, it lets you, not only it lets the clients sort of operate at their level of evolution, but it also is very easy to turn off, right? You basically just go into your DHCP.conf file, assuming you're using like something like Kia, which is what I did the testing on, comment it out, restart it, you know, at the next renewal, it will just not have option 108 in there, or you can force a renewal and it will just operate as a normal DHCP server anymore.
Point of clarification here, because 108's new for me, is it's not really to kind of echo on what Trey said, because I had the same question. It's not really turning V4 off per se, because most clients are going to, I mean, at least Windows is going to use a link local. I don't use Apple enough to know that what it does, V4 link local, I mean, not V6 link local.
The APIPA automatic.
Yeah, the APIPA 169 space, which I think is technically link local. In V4, so like you're really not disabling dual stack in that sense. You're just disabling routable V4 unicast dual stack.
It doesn't disable
the actual protocol on the adapter on the network adapter. It's just disabling your ability to route, or does it?
So I don't. Windows is probably a bad example since they don't have 108, so we couldn't say what it would do. And I don't know that the RFC defines what it would do, but like on my Mac, I'm pretty 99% sure that I don't get an automatic config address at that point.
You don't.
So you're actually functionally removing, whereas it's fair to say, based on the host and the operating system and what its behavior is in absence of a DHCP learned address, would be whether you're actually going to have V4 protocol in play or not, even a non-routable.
So the nice thing is you'd still have V4 via CLAT, right? So like, or whatever mechanism you want to use, or if it's just pure IPv6 only, and that's okay with you as a client, then your client could do that. But like, the nice thing is it's not turning off V4 like stack wide on your machine, like the classic Windows like server advisor.
Uncheck the V4.
It's not like that, but for V4. But it does basically just turn off on the interface. So like on Linux, right? Like you just like, you know, in your ifconfig, well, not anymore, in your net plan or whatever, like you would.
Yeah, I was going to say, which of the 10 ways you can configure.
Yeah, don't get me
started. So I think that there's a nuance here that I'm sort of assuming that may not be a totally correct assumption, but in the working implementations that I've seen of this, which are essentially on Apple systems at this point, you know, iOS, iPadOS, and the 13.1 or newer, I think, Mac OS, it essentially says, so it's sort of like a recipe. So if you have option 108 and you have I haven't tried it without a NAT64 DNS64. I'd be curious to see what it does there. But when you have a full stack of, equipment and protocols waiting to support an IPv6 only network, not what some purists would call IPv6 only, and that it just does, there's no IPv4 period. You just can't reach that. But like in a normal operational deployment where you have DNS64, NAT64, and then you add option 108 on a system that supports it, i.e. like the Mac or the iPhone, what it will do is it will say, okay, I have, you know, IPv6 only.ARPA, or I see pref64 in my RA. That triggers the NAT64 as well. And option 108 does something very similar in that it will say, I'm going to trigger this CLAT client, right? So you get that full stack, and it does, it, it doesn't give you an APIPA address. It gives you the 192.0.0.2 that then points at your CLAT client. This should also that doesn't, work on Linux.
But that address doesn't live on the physical interface that you're connecting it does. Upstream. Oh, it does. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it lived like on a loopback or something. It actually lives on, oh, that's interesting.
No, nope, it's if you if config like EN0 or whatever it is interface is on your Mac, it'll show up.
Whatever your NIC is where that lives. The CLAT client lives there.
Nick has it tattooed on his butt. Yeah. oh, Nick.
Along with the Death Star with the words, "That's no moon."
So, okay, this is interesting, like, that we chose to do this with V4, right? Because like you said at the beginning, it's like the old guard, like, signing off, like, it's like the saluting emoji, like, you know, like the captain going down with his submarine or ship.
Yep.
Like, you know, playing "Near My God to Thee" as it just goes down. But so was it, I was doing some looking up before this, like, there's also RFC 8781, which is Pref 64 in RAs, which mm-hmm. is an interesting approach as well, because you can basically tell a client the same thing, like, prefer 6 over 4, but you do it in the router advertisements, obviously in V6. That sounds like it's a lot more work than just adding DHCP options. Interestingly enough, there's a name on here that has, of course, some opinions about DHCP, Lorenzo Coletti. Oh, of course, it's in RAs, not in DHCP V6, which I don't think doing DHCP V6 would necessarily make sense. But, like, it's kind of an interesting difference in approach between the option 108. You can just kind of add option 108 to any DHCP server. You don't need to do a code update for that. Like, you can add custom options to DHCP. That's kind of one of the beauties of it. But, yeah. Like, reading through this Pref 64 stuff, it seems like it's quite a bit more involved. But I don't know if you know anything about Pref 64 and how that actually kind of compares to this, if they're complementary. It seems like they're kind of competing.
I haven't heard about that one, but I can tell you from the operational work I do, and, you know, with you guys know I do a lot of IPv6, you know, deployment and ISPs, and I would take the DHCP server every day of the week over trying to figure out what's supported in RAs across 10 different routing platforms. And because you problem. Think about that from an operational perspective, that's a hell of a lot easier problem to solve.
Yeah, the DHCP and the ability to do relay, you know, and centralize that with, like, two redundant systems, I think, is really the sort of selling point of the option 108. I've done some work, like, RouterOS supports the Pref 64 in 7.2 and newer, I think. Kevin probably knows better than I do.
Yeah, they added I'd have to go look at that one, but I know they added RA preference in mid sevens, 7.5, 7.6.
Mid sevens, they added Pref 64.
They added the ability to set RA Pref, yeah.
Well, not just that. They also added the Pref 64 option, right? Because it's different. It's a different
option. Right, but I think you're right. But I think they added, I think they added it. I'll have to go back and look. I think they added it after they added the ability to set any kind of a pref versus
I believe you're
Pref
right.
64.
I believe you're right. Correct.
Like, essentially, you're right. I don't remember the versions.
So I think Pref 64 versus, like, the prefix precedent stuff. Like, Pref 64 is very similar to 108, where you can basically just tell a client, hey, like, in the RA, like, use
V6. It's the anti-ULA.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Let's not go. Let's not open that can. Yeah. But the Pref 60, you have to have either Pref 64, you have to have IPv6 only.ARPA support. And Pref 64 is not widely supported in a lot of router platforms. You can do it in RADVD, which is probably what RouterOS based theirs off of, but only Kevin will know because he's basically family. And we should link to that.
Only on Tuesday nights.
But I think it's, I was talking to Scott Hoag, and he was telling me it's available in one of the later versions of iOS. One of the newer versions of iOS supports it. I have not seen it in Junos. Trey, do you know if it's supported in Cumulus?
In, like, FRR? I don't recall seeing anyone doing that one.
Yeah, it's sort of fringe, to be honest.
Probably wouldn't be too bad. I'm sure if someone showed up in the FRR Slack and asked for it, it would get done fairly soon.
I mean, there's already working open source examples of it to build from. So my guess is it'll start to get added faster and faster.
Yeah, it looks like the Pref 64 stuff did get merged in. Oh, no, it's actually an open PR.
It's kind of like the DNS stuff. I think someone just kind of, like, showed up and was like, hey, it'd be cool to have this. And then someone else wrote it in, like, a week. So
nice.
Yeah. Yeah, there actually is a PR 11.2.2.4 on FRR for this. So, Trey, merge that. I don't know if the code's any good.
I'll go yell at
Donald.
Don't
urge it if it sucks. Yeah, go yell at El Donaldo. Oh, yeah. Wait, hold on. Donald's already been talking on it.
So I guess like the in practice, the order of operations, you know, just for those that may be interested in sort of the nuts and bolts is, you know, if client supports option 108, client deactivates IPv4 upon reception of option 108 with the time duration set, and it deactivates that period of time. It enables the CLAT client, installs RDNSS resolvers, which in theory support DNS64. So you've got an RA is also required, and your DNS, you know, exists within the RDNSS field of your router advertisement, right? So if you think about this from an operational deployment, you've got DHCPv4, you've got RA for IPv6, you're handing out DHCP in both of those. You're handing it out in DHCPv4 and also in the RA using RDNSS. Depending on what your client supports is the DNS server that gets installed. If a client does support it, it goes through the process I just described, right? Deactivates V4, enables CLAT, probably installs the RDNSS resolvers as your, you know, as your resolvers, because you're going to be doing NAT64 at that point. If client doesn't support 108, but it does support V6, it ignores option 108. It installs the IPv4 DHCP address. It uses IPv6 address. It's probably gotten via RA, or maybe you also have DHCPv6 if you're not running Android. And it uses the IPv4 DNS servers from DHCPv4. That's a very important sort of minute detail there, is which DNS servers get installed, because they can't be mixed up, or else it's broken, right? If you get DNS64 installed, but you don't have that in place, it's gonna, you don't want to support that.
You know,
if the client doesn't support V6 at all, it just ignores option 108 in theory and installs IPv4 via DHCP and ignores the presence of IPv6. There's some hairy corner that we should talk about there as well.
Talk about it.
And yeah, so there is an elephant in the room when it comes to this, and it is Android devices. If Android is using a... if Android is using a wired Ethernet, it will work. If it's on the wireless, my experience with this, and again, your mileage may vary, please double check me, is that it won't even like connect to the wireless. It just doesn't work. And we've replicated this with even newer versions of Android, like Android 13. We tested it with originally a very old Android. I think it was like maybe 9.
Where does it fail at? What part of the connection does it? Does it fail? A lot of devices will do a health check and then kick you off the Wi-Fi if it says, "Hey, I can't get to the internet." So if it's is it like an IPv4 health check and then it boots you, or
it does not? From, and I don't know Android very well, but in looking at it, it appears to try to associate and then fails.
Huh. That'd be interesting to go debug what stage that actually dies at.
Yeah, I think the only way we were thinking about trying to do some torch or some TCP dumps on the MikroTik, that's the intermediary between those. We never got around to that because we were able to replicate it pretty easily with even newer versions of Android.
Well, it is interesting you bring this up, because I've seen, you know, somewhat similar sounding issues on macOS with our 108 network. Oh, yeah, on our network that has 108 or... Well, whether it's 108 or not, actually, I'm not sure. But we have that V6 only network that basically, like, when I'm on wired and wireless, my machine will get very confused, and the CLAT daemon basically doesn't work very well in that scenario and needs to be, like, basically kicked in the pants to basically allow, because I'll basically have a ghost CLAT, like, thing running that isn't actually CLATing, and so it doesn't actually work for me. So I wonder if those are, like, actually related, like, issues that kind of point to an order of operations thing.
I haven't seen that problem, and I'm on that same network, but also that's not the network that we have the 108 on. That's only
not related to
guest network.
V6 only.
Yeah, that's just V6 only. We should definitely debug that a little bit more, because that's an interesting problem.
One of these days.
One of these days in all of our spare time.
All that to say, like, I mean, I don't know, like, when I don't really have a lot of problems being on a V6 only network. Like, just to the more general, like, discussion point here, like, it really works super well, especially having CLAT now. Because yes. I can be on a V6 only network and not even know it until like I actually go and look at my interface IPs and go, oh, what? Yeah, like it works super well and it's really nice.
Funny, because when Apple implemented the CLAT client, I actually didn't know they did it. And I was in the office really early one morning because I, you know, when I drop kids off to school, I'm there before everybody else. And I just instinctively pinged 1.1.1 for something and it worked. And I immediately was like fired up because I thought someone went and enabled IPv4 on the network. And I was like, what the hell? And then I realized I didn't have an IPv4 address, but I had the CLAT enabled. And I was like, oh, crud. You know, and I probably looked for a good 15, 20 minutes before I realized that's what had happened. And then I, of course, looked at some message boards and things like that and found, oh, well, they implemented CLAT in there. It's basically the same as an iOS device at this point. You're right. It just works. Like all the wacky problems that we had, like couldn't get to Microsoft Teams using the app, but it worked fine using the browser. That all just went away. Like it just disappeared at that point.
Yeah, it does. It does make me a sad panda to a degree. Like it's nice that it works, but then at the same time, I'm like, well, like to me, that means as an app developer or as a, you know, developer, right? People are going to still be doing this V4 thing and like, they're just going to keep doing it.
Man, because like
they're given a crutch to do it on and on and on and on and on and on forever.
And that's where the big gap is from what I've seen is the app development. Yeah. Like we're network is making up a lot of ground. Like not like we're perfect or we don't have anything else to do, but yeah, I think the app side of it is really where we're starting to see the gaps on that. So I've not tried that though with what you guys are talking about with the CLAT. So now I'm gonna have to. I don't have any Apple stuff except for my kids' stuff. So I'll have to.
I mean, you could do it with Linux.
Yeah, I'll have to play with it in Linux in the lab. Throw up a hypervisor. Put some. I have some old Android devices. Maybe I could try that. See.
Windows has CLAT, I think.
Only on the it only supports it on the mobile interfaces right now. It definitely has the code.
Wireless.
Okay.
It's not even wireless. It has to be like a cellular interface.
Yeah, cellular wireless. Yeah. That's so weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that they're, you know, with the federal mandate for IPv6 only, I would guess that, and again, this is just a guess, but it doesn't make any sense to me that they would not implement that in some future patch of Windows because they've already got the code. They know it works. And I know for 100%, because I've actually asked for it myself, but, you know, multiple agencies are very likely asking for this.
So, I wonder, can you just trick an interface to think it's a WAN, like a wide area wireless WAN or whatever they call it on Windows?
I mean, I'm sure you could. I think it probably comes off the driver and the chipset that it's reading it from and it was how it classifies it, you know, from Windows. At least Windows is probably looking at it from combination of device manager and the firewall and the way that it classifies it. Because usually it's putting it into different zones, like in Windows Firewall for how it's going to communicate. So that would be my guess. I'd have to go dig into it. I haven't dug into the guts of the Windows OS like that in a while, but.
That'd be interesting to know.
So here's my question. Like I'm the last guy to be like, the sky is falling security, but man, what a tool to wreck a network. How do you secure this? Imagine like whether you're doing a man in the middle attack or whether you get access to this and you just shut off someone's V4 when they're not wanting to do it.
And if you're on a broadcast domain, like you could just like, I guess the client has to ask for the 108 option.
Well, yes, I guess you assume like, let's fast forward and assume Windows is it. Let's fast forward a year and assume Windows has this now. Imagine, you know, shutting off V4 and who's going to troubleshoot that one, man? I mean, I'm calling it right now. Somebody's going to do this. We're going to come back to this episode and Nick can give me $20 because somebody is going to execute this attack. Somebody is going to execute this attack and shut someone's V4 off. And it's going to take a team of otherwise incredibly talented engineers like a day to figure this out.
Yeah, that would be a real pain to troubleshoot.
It's definitely called out.
DHCP snooping stuff and like dynamic ARP inspection and all that shit. Well, I mean, maybe not ARP in this case, but.
Yeah, you would probably.
Yeah, I think the way to solve that is, you know, like you said, Trey, DHCP snooping and whatever the other one is, DHCP. I mean,
it'd have to be with like the server would have to support it too. So even if you just injected a client that wanted that option, but your server doesn't support it, I mean.
Unless you have a rogue DHCP server. So yeah, that's why. Yeah, I guess lesson learned, always have DHCP snooping and don't allow rogue DHCP servers in your network because that's bad. And I guess really it's not any different class of a problem than a rogue DHCP server at that point. It's just that, you know, it's a new way to
make it happen. Yeah, it's such an odd way to like execute it. That's the thing. You're right. It's not that the mechanics of this are any different than things, other things that you could do, but who's going to be looking for this one?
Well, you're almost, because you're almost spoofing the client, though, right? Like you're requesting a different option on behalf of a different client. Is that a known attack vector with DHCP? I mean, I've seen address exhaustion and stuff like that, but like, I don't normally say, hey, I'd like this on behalf of my buddy over here.
You could. I mean, you could in a way because you could just say, you know, spoof the source MAC to be whatever client you wanted to target. Say, I'm needing option 108. And then the server responds. And maybe the client, if it's poorly written, just goes, oh, they're doing an option 108 now. Okay, turn off my V4.
Yeah, so I mean,
yeah,
and
that, and,
well,
and
that, yeah, that's kind of the question, though, right? Is like, well, one, like you'd think like port security for like a sticky MAC or something like that, just drop it on ingress. Yeah. But like, let's say you don't spoof the MAC anyway. If it's getting relayed, you kind of lose sight of the MAC of the original packet. So as long as whatever you put in the DHCP frame looks okay, then what?
Somebody's going to restart a DHCP server at least 5 times and try to fix this.
No one's going to be Kevin.
Yeah.
It's going to be
Kevin. I mean, they do call this out in section 6 of RFC 8925 in the security considerations, you know, that an attacker might send a spoof DHCP offer
to just shut down V4 for just because. Yeah.
And it's particularly egregious on an IPv4 only network. Right.
Because well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, think about using this like contrary to its intended purpose. Let's go into your average enterprise, which we know has been kicking and screaming against IPv6. And then you throw this in there.
Now I'm going to turn off. I'm turning off DHCP now because I'm afraid of this. Maybe that'll work. Then they'll just move to V6 only.
Static IPs across the board.
Static IP. Dude, don't get me started. I literally had a boss once who he said, there was two things. He said, I don't believe in spanning tree and I don't believe in DHCP. And I don't believe in spanning tree. I always was like, it's not Santa. Like it's not, it's real. Unlike Santa.
Seeing
Sorry.
Is believing.
As much as we all hate layer 2 problems, spanning tree does solve them.
Yeah. You got to have it. Like believe in it or not. Like it's there. Yeah. It's real.
I back in 2004, I took down a national research network from Illinois, Champaign-Urbana West, with a freaking spanning tree loop. So, you know, the fallout is big.
Boomst amongst us.
I will fully admit it was my own ignorance. I didn't realize that we had sprawled some things around and it broke things and it was a bad day. And I hate spanning tree, but also that would have saved me a hell of a headache that day. So,
spanning tree doesn't break things. Spanning tree misconfigurations break things. But
yes, no. That's a very accurate statement.
So I guess, I don't know, Nick, do you have some like a last minute like summary of like option 108 and what you would want people to take away?
Yeah, I mean, I think if folks are out there and they're thinking about doing some V6 only work, I think option 108 is a viable option for doing IPv6 mostly because it leaves hosts that are incapable of doing it to still use legacy IP. I think it's a very viable deployment option. It should be probably tested and considered for as part of a larger migration strategy. And also, you know, the more people that go out and pound on Microsoft to add these things to Windows, the more likely they are to happen. So go forth and be annoying. And I think,
challenge
accepted. Yeah, challenge accepted. I don't have really anything else. We can probably wrap on that note unless anybody else has some stuff to say. Anybody? Kevin, where can people find you on the network? Where can people
on the
find
network?
You on the network?
On IP Classic or on new IP?
On current IP.
On new IP? Okay. Yeah. We use a Coke analogy. You can find me on the internet at Stubberry51 on Twitter, and all my other contact information is there.
Chris, where can people find you?
You can find me at CrankyNetMan on Twitter or at dial.modem.show. Yeah, that's right. We've got our
own. Yeah. We're in the Fediverse.
We toot on there.
We
And we also post toots. Yeah.
Yes.
There we go. Yeah. Moving on. Yep. That's where you can find me, and also my blog /64.tech, modem.show, etc.
Sweet. And out on your new bike.
Yeah, that's right.
Trey, where can people find you?
LinkedIn, I guess, probably on Packer Pictures, Slack, wherever. I don't know. Not a ton of places. FRR Slack would probably be a good one.
FRR routing. You keep it high and tight.
Yeah. There we go.
Nice.
You can find Trey at your local yoga studio.
That's right. There we
go. That's pretty dope, actually.
Bend and stretch.
And I'm Nick Braulio. People know where to find me. I'm around. Forwarding Plane, dial.modem.show on the Fediverse, Forwarding Plane on Twitter, blog forwardingplane.net, modem.show, probably other places. I'm droning on. Resistance is futile. Thanks for listening. Go rate us on Apple or whatever, or don't. That's fine too.
Give me a 5-star and give Nick a 1-star.
Yeah. Wait a minute. All right. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning into the Modem Podcast, where yesterday's modems are today's transponders. For more information or to request a topic, please visit modem.show.